Good evening, this is Jane Hoffman of Cultural Uprising. After 14 years, we changed the name of our show this year. I'm bringing up two controversial topics. Neil is on the line, and Suzette will be calling in for sure, and maybe Don after a half hour because he's at a MLK banquet. I don't know about Pianke, and John is off the grid right now. George Floyd did not die of asphyxiation. He died of ODing on fentanyl and meth. There's a new documentary on YouTube called The Fall of Minneapolis, and it revealed a lot of negative things. First of all, I'll start with the nuts and bolts and then work my way down. And then, secondly, we're going to talk about why Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley are against the woke movement, how they're technically going against the grain of popular opinion on this topic, and why they feel threatened. I watched at least 75% of the documentary on Minneapolis, and I'm disturbed. Number one, I am a resident of this state and have been at least half my life. And number two, the police made some grave mistakes about not releasing certain footage at the time of George Floyd's arrest, and they made other mistakes by allowing the mayor, Jacob Fry, to let the third precinct burn. It was Mayor Fry's decision, and it went against police better judgment. I will get into it in a sec. So first of all, George Floyd was high as a kite when he got arrested for forging a $20 bill. He would not get out of the vehicle after the police told him to put both hands on the wheel. He was too busy popping the illegal drugs in the car that were right next to him and were seen in his mouth on video. In 2019, the same officer who was at that scene was at another scene at another park in Minneapolis. And Floyd avoided arrest at that scene because he had popped a number of pills in the same manner he did in that arrest. And his blood pressure was 216/160. So instead of getting arrested, he was sent to the hospital by ambulance. He was a full-fledged drug addict and dealer. Secondly, he was crying for his mama before getting out of his own vehicle, and he told the cops that he had just talked to his mother and she had been dead for 2 years. The problem was with Floyd in this situation, and I'm not saying the cops are perfect, but the problem with Floyd is that he wouldn't get out of the vehicle at all, and once they actually managed to get him out and walk across the street to put him in the other squad car, he wouldn't get in. So then four officers had to take him, like, he wouldn't get in, and he was stuck halfway between the pavement and the door, so he himself pushed his way out of the car, and then he fell down by the curb, and the cops had to move him onto the sidewalk. So had he gotten in the squad car and not have constant panic attacks, he would have lived because he wouldn't have been nailed down by Derek Chauvin. So what I want to say, and Neil, I see you on the line, so you can comment if you choose. What I want to say is that I kind of pity George Floyd in the sense that he was so emotional and emotionally weak in the sense that I don't know what his mental condition was besides using drugs, but he couldn't protect himself in making the right choices. Even one of his friends in the car said, just stop resisting and get out. So what happened was we know the whole 18-minute segment where he Chauvin nailed on his neck. Then they put him in the ambulance, and two of the cops had called the ambulance service well before he was ever on the sidewalk with Chauvin. In other words, it happened within the first 2 or 3 minutes of his arrest. So then, after he was still alive and put in the ambulance, one of the EMTs failed to put the oxygen onto the machine that makes the oxygen flow. In other words, they put it around his nose, but they didn't put it into the machine. And secondly, actually it was a reporter that caught that because she was looking at the former video. She noticed it first, well before the cops or the police. But one of the police rode with them, so I'm sure it got straightened out in the ambulance. Needless to say, Fry let the whole police thing burn down, and there were still 50 cops right inside the precinct right before they handed it over to the public. And some of the police did not have police protection getting out of the precinct. In other words, they were thrown to the wolves. Secondly, during the peak of the riots that happened 3 to 5 days after the death of George, the cops were only allowed to wear helmets, and they couldn't wear any other riot gear, and they were told by the top of the police chain not to stop anyone from looting or breaking buildings and windows. So in other words, they had to sit there in their squad cars, in their helmet, recording all the bad things that happened. Now, I find that ridiculous because there was a certain point in the looting where it was all over the city. Like, a bunch of stores burned down, even some African food stores, a whole bank burned down, the precinct burned down. It was just out of control. The politicians wanted to protect the people who thought that George Floyd was treated super badly from the time he was arrested to the time he died. And it is extremely unfortunate that he died, and it did expose unfair elements of society. But I think if they would have had a little bit more control over his emotional state, it would have turned out better. I will not talk about the Iowa caucus until I got some people on the air, so here goes. Just a moment. Oh, now I have someone from the 307 calling. I'm going to get to you in a second, 307. I'm talking to my friend that just called in from St. Paul. Hi, Nebru. How are you doing tonight? You can't go silent now because you're the only regular host that's called in. Could you just make a few points? Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay.
You can just comment. You know, you don't have to go into a monologue.
Well,
at least just comment on my intro.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep it brief here. As you said, there were many errors that occurred with the George Floyd case there, and I agree with you. But the overall issue is how police manage and deal with non-Caucasian
people,
how they treat them. That's the issue. I mean, every case is different, but the issue is, as Minneapolis has been trying to do and around the country, is police reform. It's just obvious is there's no fairness to it. There's no equity to it. That's the issue. And I'm not, again, like you said, George Floyd, yeah, maybe he could have done some things differently as well. But the overall issue is police reform so we can get some fairness. You know, the people, non-Caucasian people, minority people can find fairness and justice when they're actually pulled over by the cop. Just one small example, and I'll stop. I'll just
no, it's
it
all right. And I just want to say to the guest caller, you can call right – you can talk next right after Nebru's done.
And just for instance, just a small comparison, if anyone saw the videos of the Jewish people in New York with the little type of riot issue that they had going on with the tunnels, and if you look at the videos, I mean, there were a lot of those young men, and I mean, they surrounded the cops. The cops had no gears on to protect themselves. They had the tapes up. They just tore down the tapes of the cop. I mean, if those are minority,
you mean the
people,
body cams?
Well, no. The point that they treated them so gently during a riot. I mean, they let people get behind them. You know, I mean, they let them push them. They shove them. I mean, if in a lot of cases, you know, where people have seen example, if a police broke his fingernail, you know, that's grounds for shooting and killing someone. But so that's the issue. The issue is the unfairness.
That's a very good point.
That's
and you know what?
Issue.
I didn't bring this topic up because I'm against George Floyd. I brought it. Very good things came out of the George Floyd riots and a lot of awareness. But the fact of the matter is that in the beginning of the documentary, which only obviously shows one perspective, they showed the list of George Floyd's previous offenses and how he was out of control another time at a videotaped arrest concerning drugs and erratic behavior, that he just cannot contain himself in a situation where he feels threatened. And my point was for bringing it up tonight is I live in Minnesota, and I wrote two articles for the Duluth News Tribune in defense of George Floyd. But had I known the full picture, I think I would have written in a different light. And Derek Chauvin is obviously incriminated. I have second thoughts about the other three that were working with him. But let's bring the other caller in to see what this person has to say, and then and then you can hang out. But also, you made great points, Neil, but the other thing is you have to talk a little louder because I couldn't hear you that well. Okay?
Okay.
So let me bring in this new person, and Suzette still hasn't called in. Hello, this is Jane from Political Gravity, now called Cultural Uprising. Who am I speaking with?
Good evening, Jane. How's it going?
I'm going good. I was just wondering what part of the country you're calling from.
Actually, this is Mark calling out of Wyoming.
Oh, great. It's an area code I don't recognize, and I know most of them. Is there something you would like to say?
You know, your title truly does speak to me because people aren't looking at the bigger picture of the situation. You know, your last caller, you know, please excuse me, but I was just getting some very anti-Semitic vibes from that because there's quite a difference from, you know, a bunch of people in a church, you know, actually like yelling and things like that compared to people that are burning down buildings and, you know, putting people's lives and livelihood at harm. I mean, unfortunately, the media portrayed George Floyd as this giving father whom, you know, was murdered by the police because, you know, he was just trying to buy something to drink or something like that, which is not the case. The whole reason why the police got called in the first place was he was using a counterfeit $20 bill.
Right.
And the inconvenient
truth Mark, is, did you hear me when I said that there's a new documentary out on YouTube? It's available to watch for free, but George Floyd did not cooperate at all in the first 12 minutes or so before that 18-year-old high school student videotaped Derek Chauvin. Like, he was struggling. He was elbowing the cops. He kicked the cop, Officer Hain. He wouldn't get out of
the
car, and then he wouldn't get into the next car. He was out of control.
It's all on the full body cam, and that's the inconvenient truth for the media because it does not follow the narrative that they're trying to push. The only thing that did come out of, you know, the George Floyd situation is we were already in a very tense, you know, state of mind with the country. We were dealing with the global pandemic. People were, you know, barricaded basically inside their homes. And
good
the next
point.
Thing, you know, you have, you know, this cabin fever, as I'd like to call it. People just, you know, losing their minds, and then they have something to be mad at when not knowing the entire, you know, facts of the matter. And so they go out, and I mean, they, you know, if black lives really did matter, then why were they burning down black-owned businesses? People's livelihoods were completely destroyed.
Right. There's a lot of Africans in the cities, and they ruined a lot of their stores.
And I saw videos of black people being murdered by other black people. I mean, if that was really the case, Black Lives Matter, supposed charity, take millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars in, and then support, you know, white people, that money never went back to the inner cities. That money never went back to black people. The founders of the, you know, the charity, if you will, were living in multi-million-dollar mansions in California.
I know there was a charity. There were two Somalians that started a nutrition lunch program during COVID for elementary kids, and they ripped off the federal government with COVID funds of over $600,000. And they were eventually jailed. But they were Somalians, they were Africans. But the fact of the matter is
right.
They have to pay it back, and they had to do a jail time.
Right. And unfortunately, you know, people are just not seeing the bigger picture. And, you know, I don't really want to go into the whole tunnels and whatnot because I don't know the full facts on that. But bringing that up and a bunch of people in a synagogue, you know, yelling at police that have no weapons on them, I mean, no intention of hurting the police. You can't compare that to what happened after George Floyd died. I mean, you can't. That's just
anti-Semitic. Well, the other thing is the brazen – Neil, you can come back in a sec. The brazenness in which they destroyed buildings, the Minneapolis police did not protect their own. They only let them wear helmets and not try to stop any of the rioting. And Mayor Fry's decision to let a police building burn – the documentary exposed it all. And, you know, I know a lot of black people. My son is half Liberian from the African, people. I don't want to say this on the air, but he grew up in Los Angeles and Duluth, Minnesota, but he's never exhibited any type of criminal behavior except for maybe he got high in college, but all I'm saying is that there's all different people raised all different ways, and there were two black cops interviewed in the documentary, and they were explaining how upset they were that the precinct got burned because they served over 30 years out of that precinct.
Well,
so I felt like
nothing to do with the color, right, of whatever. My biggest issue is that we allowed, you know, this wasn't peaceful protest. This was riots. You know, this was messing with people's livelihoods. I mean, if black lives really did matter, why weren't we giving that money back to black communities? Why weren't we helping black people? Why were we allowing this to just become an even bigger conundrum to the fact of the matter where it, you know, it set an even bigger, you know, divide to the country? Because that's all this was boiled down to, was dividing the country. And then you see huge corporations like, you know, Disney giving George Floyd's daughter, whom he had nothing to ever do with, you know, stocks and, you know, trying to erase Aunt Jemima or things like that, which is a caricature, if you will. But then on top of all of that, what just really blows my mind is they really believe that, you know, giving money to somebody or, you know, trying to make right is really going to, you know, cover the fact that there's a bigger issue at hand and it's the media trying to pit Americans against Americans.
Well, what do you think of the Minneapolis police not releasing the original footage for 2.5 months? Like, they didn't even stand on their own ethics. Like, that was a huge failure.
Because of the fact that they probably did not have a single bit of control of that. There is people in higher places that want things to burn and to go downhill real quick, and the higher-ups did not allow that to happen while things burnt down to the ground.
Yeah, I felt like the reaction to the riots or to the death was so fast and so emotional, nothing could have stopped it in that moment. So, Neil, Nebru, what do you think of what our caller said, Mark?
Well, I disagree. There was nothing anti-Semitic about it. That was just the latest example of where non-Caucasian people will get the benefit of the doubt from the police department. I could have come up with many videos I've seen where you'll have, you know, Caucasian people with guns and knives pointing at the cops, and they still live through it. You have mass shooters in schools, and they find a way of allowing them to live and take them in. So it wasn't nothing anti-Semitic. That was just the last example.
Well, maybe he just sensed that, but he doesn't know you personally.
Well, and that's why I'm explaining this, just with the latest example. What I didn't say anything specifically about the Semitic people, and myself being Semitic as well. So again, as I state, there is a lot of issues, a lot of things that went wrong with the George Floyd thing. And yes, he did drugs, but that's the whole point of being a professional. You should be able to learn how to deal with people that's on drugs, learn how to deal with people who are mentally ill. I mean, they take the time to take ropes and pull down animals without shooting, I mean, dangerous animals. So there's many ways of apprehending a person without killing them. They did get him out of the car. He was sitting there. He was handcuffed. And, okay, he'll have anxiety or whatever. Well, deal with that as a human being. It's not about you controlling everything. It's not about your fear. You're a professional, and you should learn how to handle people justly and fairly. George Floyd was no threat to him. He was in handcuffs already. So I'm not –
May I say one thing, though? Just I hate to cut you off. I just would like to say one thing. When you have something like methamphetamines and fentanyl in your system, that's what they call a speedball. And if your heart rate goes into a higher, you know, higher than normal heart rate, it can lead to death. And at the same time, George Floyd was not a small guy at all. And
no, it's
after
not,
you know, look, and after looking into things, I mean, did you realize that he, you know, was in prison for literally pointing a gun to a pregnant woman's belly saying, "I will kill you and your baby," while running?
That's irrelevant. We're talking about this.
I remember that now that you mentioned
but
it.
All that's still relevant. We're talking about that specific incident when he was killed, when he was murdered. So all those things in the past doesn't matter. He's taken drugs. He's obviously been able to handle it, and the jury found him guilty. So, again, yeah, everybody can have their opinion. I agree with you on that, and that's fine. But the point was he was handcuffed. All these drug things came out after the fact. The cops didn't know that. They per se can't assume that. But the point comes down to is just learning how to deal with non-Caucasian people on an equitable basis is the issue. That's all I'm saying. You know, we can pick apart every single case. That's fine. But the overall theme is people that are not minority people do not get fair, equitable treatment by police officer, and that's just the facts.
Anyways, you guys, it's okay if you don't agree. I have a question for Mark.
I love
Mark, when did you start researching this topic about the whole scope of the George Floyd thing? Is it something you do regularly with major news stories?
From the get-go, and I don't trust any, you know, source of news from the United States. I get most of my my news from outside of the U.S. You know, and I'm not
BBC
even divulging.
Like the BBC and Al Jazeera?
Not so much the BBC, but I'm not going to divulge into my
it's
race,
okay,
my background.
It's okay, I was just
curious. Oh, no, you're fine, but I'm just going to say I'm not going to divulge into that because it's irrelevant. Facts are facts. I mean, if you really dig into the facts, I mean, there's more Caucasians that are killed by police than blacks annually. That's by multiple.
That's because there's more of you, so that's just obvious.
Well, I mean, if that's, you know, if that's what you're trying to persuade, then why is 50% of violent crimes committed by people of African descent? So there might be more Caucasians, and you're saying more of us. You're assuming what my race is, which I don't want to divulge because it's irrelevant. I'd like to have
I'm not assuming anything about your race. I have no idea who you are.
Exactly.
Well, I'll
so,
speak. I'm white, and I think most black people commit more violent crimes because a lot of them come from a place of poverty and rage.
Well, that's not true. They might get convicted more often because they don't have money to pay for lawyers. But as the guy said, and I've seen the statistic, Caucasians do actually commit more. But yes, on per capita, when you look at not just black people, but minority people in general, per capita, yes, there is more crime per capita. And again, you have many social factors that can contribute. I'm not saying just because you're poor it makes you a criminal. That's not the case at all. But is the crime rate high in minority communities? Higher than it needs to be, should be, everybody wants to be? Absolutely.
I lived in L.A., and I lived in a first-generation Latino neighborhood called Boyle Heights. Actually, it was a multi-generation, but the fact is that in poorer people of color neighborhoods, there's more crime. There might not be one specific cause. I was in a gang area, and I taught at a gang school in San Fernando. But the thing is if you're in a suburb and you're committing crimes like White Bear Lake, Minnesota, where I grew up, people don't see those crimes all the time. Like, they're not going to arrest a white high school student dealing weed. But they probably, you know, like, now that weed's more relaxed, it's not a big deal, but if they know that a person of color in a big urban city is dealing lots of amounts of dangerous drugs, that person's more likely to get than in a white area. Now, I'm not saying the consequences are always the same, but the thing is yes, there's disparity, but it's not what Mark – I agree with Mark in the sense that the daily news stories that are promoted are tainted in themselves because – we don't hear the underside of other kinds of crimes that might be committed that are also uncommon. So I don't really know. You know, like, there was a guy on the cusp of Washington State and I believe Utah or Idaho that he killed four people in a college community, and obviously that's going to reach headline news. And he also had a mental health condition. But if a white person, like, it took a lot of years to convict that lady who developed a one-step blood test to find a lot of diseases because she deceived her donors. And but eventually she did make the headlines and they made a Netflix show about it. But there's all kinds of crimes that don't get fairly reported. And I was a police informant in Duluth for a while, but I ended up writing an article about it in the Duluth News Tribune, and I did get one scoffer, like one person saying I went about it the wrong way. But there's a lot of disparity anyways. But I'm flabbergasted in the case of George Floyd that there was a lot of obvious facts that were overlooked and not presented in the media.
Well, and you know, anybody, it was an election year. I highly doubt that it would have been as played off as it was.
Yeah. Do you guys want to move on to the next topic? It involves – you want to stay on this topic for a while, or do you want to go to the Iowa caucus?
I mean, I'm down for any topic right now.
I enjoy you as a caller.
We
can finish up on George Floyd. My other co-host, Suzette's calling in about 5 minutes. But I was wondering if anyone had anything else to say on that topic.
Yeah, before you go to Iowa caucus, I want to agree with Mark about the Black Lives Matter group. Again, you know, unfortunately, you know, there's a group that basically, you know, scan people. So I mean, that happens. And again, he's correct. None of the money went to support the black community at all, and that's a shame because they got a lot of support, and that's unfortunately with a lot of minority community fine. There's a lot of lip service that goes to to you know, there's a lot of lip service that is spoken by politicians and different groups where the money really never get down to the place to really help the people that need help. And then just back to the point, I guess I don't want to get off topic, but like you said, you have the George Floyd thing. There's a lot of mistakes. There's a lot of errors. And, of course, they had a case, and they argue, was it the drugs that killed him? Was it the pressure on his neck? You know, I mean, that's what the court came to that decision. But obviously anyone can do their own investigation and come to their own point of view. And I don't have any problem with Mark or you, Jane, after reading that article, feeling that way. I'm perfectly fine with people having their own point of view. But like I said, to me, I just hope that they continue to find a way to have better policing, because you know the black community or any other community is not against policing, because you know they're important and we need them. But people that want that protection don't want to have to be in fear of the same people that's supposed to be protecting them, and that's one of the biggest issue that the minority communities have with policing is they're in fear of the people that's supposed to protect them. And that's what I'm more interested in, you know, in a solution.
Well,
the
higher-ups didn't even protect the police in Minneapolis during the riots.
At that time, I agree with you. I think those were some very bad choices to let the building burn and then let all the rampant
police personnel
rioting and that was poor choices. I agree with you 100% on that.
And Minneapolis used to be a happy, diverse city of multicultural, upbeat, lovable. Like we were the first state to take in the Hmongs in 1975, the people who were displaced from Vietnam, Laos area. We took in Ethiopians, Somalians, Liberians after their civil war, and some Nigerians. We had a good reputation up until that situation. I think Derek Chauvin was set up.
Just to follow up on what he said. This was not no scammer or anything like this. This was the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation, a registered charity. They purchased a $6 million compound with all the donations that they received from the 2020 protests and everything like that for the founder to to literally, and you can look this up. It's on the AP. You can look this up.
Where is the compound? What city? What
in
city
LA.
Is the compound in?
L.A.
Okay.
No, he's right about that. He's right about that. They just abused and misused the money, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I remember John saying a few things about how they had an exclusive organization, and this was like 2 years ago, so I can't remember, but we do have Suzette on the line. She was one of our regular hosts in 2021 and 22, and I would like to let her in because she's been out for a few weeks, so 1 second. Hi, Suzette. We have Mark from Wyoming on the line and my friend from college, Neil. And we were discussing a documentary involving George Floyd, which exposed the other side of why he was arrested and the misrepresentation in media of the cause of his death and the lack of authority decision-making in the Twin Cities at the time of the riots. So how are you doing tonight?
Hello, everyone. I'm doing fine now. Hello, everyone.
So, Mark, can you
Hello.
Bring Suzette abreast of what exactly the thread of the conversation was?
You know, I would just say that, with people actually learning the fact that the cause of death was not due to murder, it was more attributed to the fentanyl and methamphetamines that he had in his system. fact of the matter that, you know, people have completely lost their minds about it and burnt down black communities and black neighborhoods. All hundreds of millions of dollars going into a Black Lives Matter charity, and people were living high and mighty while, you know, inner city communities, black lives didn't actually prosper from any of this money. I think that it's just all a conundrum to the fact that people wanted to stir up some controversy, and this is where we're at.
And Suzette, do you think that the situation unraveled so fast that there was no stopping the riots?
Yes, I think that the term "let no crisis go to waste" would play into this situation that happened, and immediately it was misrepresented. And prior to the actual funeral, ridiculous funeral that they had for that gentleman, people knew. It was coming out little by little through investigative journalists, alternative investigative journalists, of George Floyd, what he had done as far as prior to being arrested, as far as the drugs in his system, his health condition, his overall health condition, and everything else, but people didn't want to believe it. They just wanted to believe that police are bad and they have a thing out for black men. And they'll do anything to them in addition to arresting them, but excessive force and everything else because they're racist. That was the narrative that was being pushed. He did it, Chauvin did it because he was racist. And almost everything incident like that get escalated and made to be racist. And when I had asked you earlier about the videos and what they have in common as far as behavior goes, is white, black, it didn't matter in any of those videos where the police officers had used excessive force. In each one of those, it was very simple. If you get pulled over, answer the questions. If you start to resist in a panicking, ridiculous way where you're yelling and out of control and trying to get, you know, handcuffed and kicking windows. And, you know, I've seen that happen, not in these videos here, but in other videos. And what goes through my head is, what are these people thinking? Do they think that they're actually just, the police are going to let them go because they're screaming and, you know, moving around and kicking stuff and kicking officers and, you know, everything else? No. They're just making the problem worse.
I watched the one where the police officer was pulled over in a white car, and he started threatening his peers right at the get-go.
Now,
so even among his peers,
what's so sad is that, you know, you'll see that same type of mentality and behavior even when it's a black officer saying this to a person. And then they're called an Uncle Tom for doing their job and trying to follow standard operating procedure.
Mm-hmm. And all these people had to do was just comply. Because you're supposed to argue what happened in court in front of a judge. Officers are just going to do what they're going to do, whether they've got a grudge against people who they think are lower than they are, beneath them, and will use excessive force. Or generally that excessive force is a reaction to what the people are doing. They're just trying to arrest them for what they think these people did as far as breaking the law. Now, whether they did or not is not to be argued by the officer and the person being arrested. It's to be argued in front of a judge. And then the judge determines. And so no matter how much you
can
scream,
you're not going to. And then he was popping pills in his mouth to hide the evidence the last two times he was arrested. Like, how dumb does he think the cops are?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you all for this lovely conversation. Unfortunately, I have to depart, but I'll be sure to follow you and can't wait for our next conversation.
Yeah, you did a great job. Please call in again sometime, okay? Thanks,
Thank
Mark.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye. So, Suzette, I have my friend from college on the phone. I've known him since 1980 or so. 81 or 82. We have, this morning I was livid with another person in my life, and the title of my show was, How Does Chicken Shit DeSantis Try to Keep Rebucking Like the Woke Movement. But after listening to this new topic that I infused, I can see how conservatives get tired of the same old swan song by certain elements of society. However, if I was running for president as a moderate, I wouldn't even bring up the woke topic because I don't think it's a game changer and a vote collector. So are you guys disdainful over the lack of Republican unique candidates? And we have, I wouldn't say DeSantis or Haley is, Nikki Haley is run of the mill, but it seems like the Republicans can't attract anybody who's middle of the road.
Well, I guess that goes for just politics in general, because they have these people have known each other almost since birth, and they introduce each other, and they marry each other, and so they've known each other for a very long time. They've been groomed. So,
except for Ramaswamy.
True,
except
true.
For Ramaswamy.
Yep, Vic Ramaswamy. So, I don't know, as far as the Republican Party goes, I don't like Nikki Haley as far as for president. I don't know her personally, but as far as her aspirations for the country are all in the wrong places. And that
really?
Could
you point out
bigger,
one or two? Can you tell me about one or two policies?
She thinks that we should go to war and help Israel to annihilate Hamas. Another policy that she has, she believes that in order to get control of our children as far as what they're watching and paying attention to on TikTok, is that to register everybody on, if you're on the internet, so that way they know who you are and if you're a Chinese company or something else. And it's like, all right, so we're talking registration. I thought we were free. And as far as Chinese companies go, TikTok is not the only one that China's invested in. They're invested in all kinds of companies across the U.S. And even on land here. And so if you're going to try and kick TikTok out of here, or basically register everybody that uses TikTok, it doesn't solve the problem, because China's still everywhere. That's one entity. Why pick on that one? Make a policy that works for across the nation that has to do with buying land, and also companies that have Chinese investors or foreign investors, to limit, you know, as far as what they can buy and purchase in land, so that they're not buying it all, and basically, you know, we've been left with nothing, or basically the crap.
It's funny you mention that, because Wade said last week that he is only going to vote for someone who promotes more freedom, and that how he wants to buy land and start a business on it. And he's against Democrats who want to censor Republicans, and he doesn't think the government should try to control more than they have to. And you're kind of talking along the same lines.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there are more of us that think that way than the small group that make a loud noise. And so that's, you know, as far as people wanting that type of quality of life, they just got to get their butts out there and vote for it, and educate themselves. You know, you have people who haven't seen that George Floyd documentary, and they insist that it was racism, and, you know, Derek Chauvin needs to rot in jail, and or better yet, have the death penalty or anything else. They don't want to hear anything else.
I think he was
stabbed
in prison in the last 3 days. He was attacked in one of the prisons. What?
Something like 67 times or something.
Did he live?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it kind of paints a different picture. Neil, I'll let you go next. I think the other three cops that were involved in the death of George Floyd, and one, it was his first week at work, I think they should have given more leniency, but I read that a lot of the evidence going against the Black Lives Matters was not allowed in court. The judge did not allow it.
Yeah.
So the cops were basically screwed either way.
Yes.
So, Neil, would you like to go next now that your nemesis is off the air, the other guy from Utah?
No, he was not my nemesis. He was not my nemesis whatsoever. I mean, he has his
I was
point.
Joking, Neil.
No, okay. Well, things like that.
Well, why don't you talk about how you feel about the coming election?
No, you made me lose my point. I did have something to say, and you threw me off with the joke.
Well, I can't control your senior moments.
The George Floyd thing you just brought up. Could you have her repeat, or you just repeat the last thing you said about him? That's what
the last thing I said is that the cops. The lesser of the three cops should have maybe gotten a fair trial.
I remember now. Is it Susan?
Suzette,
sorry.
Her name's Suzette.
Okay, great. Well, no, she had mentioned something about, you know, the whole thing was, it seemed to be about racism. And of course, that was definitely part of the theme. I guess I'd like to ask her, does she believe that there isn't a racist cop out there, that they all pure and pure and driven only by their professional behavior? I mean, you have all over the
country. I don't think Suzette ever said something like that, but you can ask her feelings about it.
I mean, that's my point, because like I said, yeah, we can pick apart every single case that come to court. But for me, the overall theme is, you know, there unfortunately in our society, there is a racist element that exists, and it exists in the police department. And that's why I was saying earlier that minority people, they believe in cops. They know cops are important, but they just believe and they feel and they see and they experience what they call unfairness when it comes to treatment, and they just want things to be equitable. So we do have an element out there, and I think what happened, she's right. I mean, I can understand what she, it can sometimes overshadow everything. I'm not the type myself personally going around saying racism. I don't believe it. I don't believe it, and I don't even think that way. But when it comes to police and coming to minorities, that's always, at this point, going to always exist until we can have changes. And that's why I think police reform is very important.
That's a good point you've mentioned earlier that, see, the thing is, like a conservative like John is appalled at the fact that they were going to change police stations into like a community center. Like police would only act as a community center liaison. But the fact of the matter is that, just a second, I got distracted. There's too much violence and danger in the world right now. Like in my city, there's an epidemic of fentanyl, and people will come up to my car or somebody else's and break a window. Like somebody still has to solve those problems, like petty crime or a fight in a bar.
Yeah, no, you need cops. Cops are very important. Like you said, this is a very dangerous world we live in. So they are very important. And again, just from a melanated person point of view, I'm just saying that's how we see it, that's how we view it, that's how we experience it, unfortunately, for a number of years. And because of that, yes, what Suzette said, there's definitely an element of racism in there. And again, just from my point of view, and all the different videos I saw of cops arresting people, obviously from, I mean, they do, I mean, if you're a Caucasian person, you do get a benefit of a doubt. There's just no way around it. You just don't get treated exactly the same. And I just, you know, that's
what
I...
Well, there's been other murders in America that made headlines new with this that didn't involve cops, like that runner in a South Carolinian park.
Oh, yeah.
I think he might have been shot by a cop, but how about that African runner in Georgia who had a really smiley face? He was killed by two white racists in the neighborhood. So all those types of crimes are not committed by police, but they still are eye-openers.
Yeah,
I think that, again, the reaction and action. So you get pulled over and they tell you or ask you, you know, do you know why I pulled you over? And the person says, no, okay. So the officer says, well, you were going, you know, 60 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, you know, in a 25 mile an hour zone, whatever. And so the person starts to argue with him as far as, that wasn't me, you got somebody else. And the officer says, well, no, I was tracking you. And, you know, so they want to argue back and forth. So the officer asks them for their driver's license and their insurance. And they don't want to give up their name. And they, you know, with the whole I don't have to type thing. And for the most part, there are states where you do not have to give up your ID unless you've been committed a crime, and they can tell you what crime you committed. And then there are other states that require that if you're stopped, then you need to give your ID. So in this scenario, the person in that state or that state requires you to give up your ID, and these people will argue with the officer. So the officer is like, you know, I'm not going to be here all day waiting for you and arguing with you about giving me your ID. And so now the person's asking the supervisor. So this, you know, 10-minute stop or 5-minute stop gets escalated. So now you got this officer pissed off because this guy just, what is it? I just want your ID so I can check you out. I have the speedometer, or even if I'm just being a dick because I have a bad day today and just wanted to pull you over just for the sake of it. Now I'm frustrated. Now you're pissed off, and now this is going to get ugly because now I need you to exit the car, and you're not exiting the car, and so now I'm going to have to pull you out of the car. Now this person starts kicking and screaming and or tries to take off or something to that effect when it was really simple. And this goes for black or white. How many whites?
I have
are those,
first-hand information.
Okay.
I was just going to tell you I worked in a treatment. Well, I'll let you finish.
Okay. I was just going to say the majority of whites will not argue. They'll just, here's my license, here's my thing. They get a ticket, boom, gone. You do have those that will argue, claiming the sovereign citizen BS that's out there. And then they end up getting, you know, pushed down to the ground and arrested. But that's because they pushed something that they needed to argue with the judge. But in most cases that blacks are pulled over, and I see the videos all day long with blacks and whites, and that's the one behavior that blacks seem to go for first. They're and pardon me, but I just call it like I see it. They start to get loud, they start arguing, and you know, then they start, you know, moving around while they're trying to search them and this and that. Now, there are officers out there that will pull you over just for the sake of pulling you over. And that's wrong. And then they say that you're obstructing their investigation. Investigation over what? You haven't told me what I've done wrong yet that you're investigating. And they've actually arrested people for obstructing their investigation of they still hadn't charged them with anything. So, yeah, those guys, they need to go. But overall, it's just the behavior that we don't answer the questions, give them what they want so we can move on. If we have warrants, we know we're busted. You know, that's it. We're going to go in. And so to argue and fight with this guy, he's not going to let us go. And he's going to even want us more to take us to jail because now we're acting up and giving him additional charges to add to those warrants and what could have just been a traffic stop. So that's my point of view. Go ahead, Jane.
I'm glad you finished it out. I was going to say, for one thing, I would never have the nerve to resist a cop in any way. Also, I wanted to say I worked at a treatment center for over a year, and a lot of the clients that came in, they had at least five things on their record that were in common, and it was multiple times. They would give a false name while being arrested. And, of course, it was discovered later that they did that. But that's nervy in itself. Like, do you think they really can get away with that? Like, that's really disrespectful. So if someone was desperate and high, you know, maybe one time I could see it. But this one female in the community I live in, she did it at least 10 times. I know she had to go down to the Shakopee prison for a while for another crime, but she's never going to get a good credit score. She's never going to, you know, be able to buy a car on credit, you know, just stuff like that. Like, and I'm not going to say what race it was, but it wasn't white or black. It was another prominent race up here that's unique only to northern Minnesota. So I just think that some people in our society, they're, whether you grow up in a white family or black family, because I knew a lot of good black families in North Carolina when I lived there, but they just don't respect police authority anymore. And it probably is because of all the social media.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So
I agree with Suzette there about, you know, if people would stay calmer during these stops, things would go a lot better, and that's common sense, and I agree with her 100%. But the issue is here for minority people. I'm not just talking about black people. I'm saying minority people. Is that, well, I will use this example while driving my black. Again, unfortunately, because of historical events, you do like she just said. You're at some cops that just pull you over, But in what my understanding is, in many minority communities, that happen often. People can be pulled over, you know, just an abnormal time. And so that's a very frustrating thing to have to go through and to be, you know, to feel that oppression all the time. Like I said, you know, you hear stories all the time, you know, if minority people see cops' light come on, they just become petrified. I mean, that shouldn't be the case, you know, when you're supposed to be in a free society, you know, and so that's the issue. And so I think, you know, you're right. Unfortunately, in those cases, a lot of minorities are going to have an attitude when the cops get there to the car, going, like she said, what are you pulling me over for? And then they don't take the time to explain it or whatever. And you have something that should have been very minor leading to someone's death. I mean, we had the situation here in Minnesota with a Castillo, I can't think of his first name, is a young guy with his family in a car, and he followed the orders of the officer and still got shot and murdered. So just complying alone doesn't necessarily mean you're going to live through it. And that's one of the prime examples a lot of minority people say, I deal with the cops. I deal with the cops. Or you'll see a scenario where the little kid was playing with a toy gun, and within 6 seconds of arriving, he was shot. I mean, not that, I mean, again, I get it. It's a toy gun. But you see a child, it wasn't that, we don't know if it was pointing at the cop or anything. I mean, it just unfortunately the unfairness end up tainting too many situation that should have just been, like Suzette said, just comply, get your ticket, and move on.
I think you guys have all done a good job.
I have a question. I've run out of topics. Oh, I just have one question.
we don't have to close the show, but I haven't run out of energy, but I've run out of topics. Go ahead, Suzette.
How did that young man come about getting shot?
Neil, she had a question for you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
How did that man come about?
getting shot. Yeah. If he was complying, at what point did they just shoot him point blank? Or obviously it was done before they got to the station. So I'm just wondering at what point.
Are you talking about the one, Neil, that happened right after Floyd a year later?
Yes, in St. Paul, gang. It's well known. It's all over the state.
Oh, wait, it's not that one. Guillermo Geronimo, a Latino guy, shot a guy in St. Paul. Philando Castillo?
Philando, yes. That's his first name. Yes, yes.
Susan, there was another guy in a year after George. Okay. A year after George Floyd got shot and killed, like 11 months later in the Twin Cities over in a northern suburb, a guy, a young boy, 18, who had a new car, the police pulled him over. He resisted the police, and a female officer was going to tase him, but instead she pulled out her gun and shot him and killed him. So there was a bunch of... Something was going on in Minneapolis at the time, like something as almost as big as the Olympics. I can't remember, but the people went to her house, were throwing rocks and stuff, like her own domicile. The police had to build a fence around it, and she had to go into hiding. And about a year later, she was convicted of manslaughter. She had to serve like 6 to 8 years. But people were criticizing her because she was a cop. She'd been on the force 25 years, and when she reached for the gun instead of the tase, they said she should have felt the difference.
Yeah, because she used to do the training for that, for taser, for other officers.
And she was also training the officer that day when she killed the guy. So
right, exactly.
In that case, I kind of agree with the mob rule. Like, it was fucking, I don't like swearing on air, but it was ridiculous. Because,
right, but in that case,
she didn't have
he took off
instinct.
In the car. Right.
What?
That's right. It was wrong for how she reacted as far as getting the two mixed up between the gun and the taser. But the guy also tried to take off, too. And so she pulled out her weapon and she... you know, shot at him thinking, I don't know why she thought it was a taser gun. Obviously she doesn't know her job, but so I'm not excusing her behavior, but also on the same note, the guy tried to take off. He tried to run.
Right, he was only 18, and who knows what his upbringing was, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it just seems to be, her name was Kimberly Potter. And she killed Dante Wright. Oh, she only had to serve 16 months out of a 2-year sentence. So
I mean,
that's about right.
For that to happen, or like you say, manslaughter. And again, the issue was that people were upset that she got, you know, the time that she got was minimum, and that's what people were upset about. But Orlando Castillo. That was asking how do you get shot is what it came down to. He made the cop aware that he had a gun in the car, and he had the permit to carry it to have it. And the officer asked him to go ask him to get the permit, and as he was going for the permit, he shot him. So it was like, you asked him to do that, and he said, and I guess one excuse was he thought he was going for the gun, but it was just...
Still, they're supposed to restrain themselves.
Well, the good news for liberals is the family got a total of $3.5 million. The mother got a quarter of a million. The father got a quarter of a million, or a little less, and... Dante Wright Jr., which I don't, it must have been a sibling, got $2 million.
How much would you take?
Well, that's good. I mean, they took a life. They had, you know, because they're so fearful on the streets now, And I've seen those videos, too, where officers will, you know, be walking up to the car and telling the people to put their hands on the steering wheel. And I just saw one last night, as a matter of fact. And some guy was kind of hanging out his car a little bit, but he had one hand down. That was obvious. And the officer started to walk up, and when the officer had asked him, can I get your license and registration? And the guy shot at him. The officer didn't even have a chance to react, and he just had to run away and get out of the way. Yeah. I mean, if he hadn't have reacted as quick as he did, he would have been shot in the face. And so if these officers take that, these one incidences that occur, because they're going to occur, it's just the job. Not saying that it happens every time, because most of these officers never have to draw their weapon. And so they should look at that. But because of the hype around these few incidences that do occur, white, black, Mexican, doesn't matter, they're fearful. And so things like the young man reaching for his registration and then these officers freaking out, getting trigger happy because they're scared, they need to be taken off the force. They need to take a vacation. They need to be desk. They need to be something else until they can get their head together, maybe go back out again on the streets. But other than that, they don't belong on the streets if they're fearful like that, because now they're dangerous to society overall.
And a lot of cops have retired now because they don't want to deal with the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what, to me, police reform is. To me, is getting people trained there under those psychological situations, get them more psychological control, because again, but like I said, the thing with the Orlando situation was, I mean, he had them pulled over for a while. He was speaking with them. The girlfriend or wife was next to him.
Neil, can you talk louder? You're too far away. It sounds like you're in the distance. Yeah, you can talk on speaker most of the time when you're on this type of show. I was going to tell you one more thing, you guys. Dante Wright, even though he was 18, he had a child, and that child is the one who got the 2 mil.
Okay.
So this was a very calm situation. Let me finish it. It was a very calm situation, so that's what was so crazy about it, that, you know, he was complying, they were speaking with him, and you're right. You know, they can be fearful, and that's the thing that the police reform needs to work with is why are you so fearful? Is it just because of someone that's of a different ethnic group for you? But it doesn't necessarily have to be. I know, I understand that. But, Jane, you said that you brought up the money. How much money would you take for your sister if she was killed? Money just doesn't answer it.
I was thinking about this while I was announcing the – first of all, I have to reread his story, because he did try to get out of the car and run. So I think those type of behaviors, they have to be factored in. But the fact that the cop made that big of a mistake allowed him to receive the compensation. So for Joan, if it was my son, whoever was responsible for killing him would have blood on their hands.
I don't know how
I would react to that situation.
Yeah,
wants to go to heaven anyway, so I'm not getting the money if she dies. Only her son would, so I can't speculate. There's a line in Christianity that it says death is rapid promotion. In other words, if you die young, you get to go to heaven sooner. Now, I feel in America there's too many problems like this. They occur too often. But I think ever since the George Floyd thing, just about every police officer in every state has had some kind of retraining. So
yeah, that's good. They should.
Yeah, like that Breonna Taylor thing where state of Kentucky refused to arrest the people who did it. And then I think it happened 3 years later. There was some kind of retribution. So every state handles things differently.
Yes.
Well, anyways, you guys,
Suzette,
go ahead, and then I have a conclusion I'd like to add. When we have time, we don't have to close out yet.
All righty. Well, when you think about communities, minority communities, and the police officers that patrol that area and whether they have a reason to pull a person over, that's what should be. That's what they're required, but that's not what always happens. But anyway, nevertheless, if they're patrolling a minority community, of course there are going to be either more arrests or more pullovers of minority people because it's a minority community. And so when we say, as far as the police, will arrest or they're shoot or kill people in minority areas at increasingly alarming numbers type situation, when they want to really put it out there, well, that's because if it's a minority area, there are not going to be many other people out there that live there, and there might, except for minorities, and that's, so people forget about that as far as when they say, yeah, they're always arresting people in minority communities. Well, because they're in the minority community. And usually they'll, sometimes there'll be people walking around with bail jumpers that didn't show up for their court dates or warrants or whatever. But the chances are that there'll be more of them there than in other communities. And I'm not saying anything to the effect that they deserve to be arrested or treated badly or anything else. But they are targeted in the fashion that these policemen already look at them as not human beings, but just creatures.
Definitely.
That behave badly, and that's
when
a bad
Mark
thing.
Was on the phone, we discussed this. We discussed the probability of why minorities are arrested more than white people hiding out in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's where the retraining needs to be, is because these police officers don't see people as human beings anymore. They have a vision in their mind about who's who and who deserves what as far as treatment goes, and address them accordingly, as far as maybe a fluent area where this person happened to, didn't stop at a four-way stop, so they pulled them over, and they'll address them as, yes, ma'am, ma'am, can I please see your driver's license, versus a minority community where they don't see them as human beings. It's just like, give me your license and registration. Can I have your license and registration? No, yes, ma'am, or no, sir, or anything else. They don't address them as people. And I've noticed that.
They are predisposed. The cop that shot Michael Brown in Ferguson, he was predisposed to young black men, what their value was and what they're capable of.
Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily think it's necessarily, well, we say minority, but what is minority these days when when whites are actually becoming the minority? And I say that because of my husband. I myself, Jane knows, I'm not Caucasian, and so we both.
You talk like
matter.
You are, though.
Yeah, I know.
Is your original home country, are you Colombian?
Yes. And you've met me in person, so I could use you to
right.
But anyway.
The thing is about you is, I'm not trying to be sarcastic or racist. You sound like a white intellectual, a professor from a college.
You're being very racist right now.
Well, my friend Don, who's on,
you
Neil
you
knows.
Say that, you are when you say that. That's
well,
the
I know there's plenty of educated minorities, which I hate that word, minorities. It's so, but Don Gallimore and I worked at the LA Times, and I was the person who stopped the credit line, and he was the salesperson. So I would talk to him on the phone for over 5 months before I met him face to face. I had no idea he was black. I thought he was from an East Coast Ivy League school.
Oh, wow.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Neil, I have a lot of dispositions that are racist, just like everybody else.
I know, Jim. I know you.
But
the other issue is when we talk about police reform, I think one of the issues they really need to do that better is they hire too many people, in my opinion, that's the ex-military, and these guys are all coming back with PTSD. I think that's a lot of the problem. Those are some scary people, and I think those are the people that I think probably have some of the hardest time dealing with people as just civilians. And I wish that would be one of the things that with the training is one of the things they bet more than they do now. And then with the defunding of the police, obviously, I think taking away some of this military equipment they have, I think is helpful too, because I think that just put them in the mindset that you know we can pretty much do anything we want. We're at war, you know. Instead of we're out here serving the public, is like no, you come out with all that stuff, you know, that's so intimidating. And I think that just have effect in their mindset as well.
Absolutely. And I have to disagree a little bit about the hiring ex-military. And I say that only because the ones that have made it through their PTSD as far as had to or utilize the resources that were available to them, and I understand that they're not everywhere as far as the resources in every state and every county or city. But those that are fortunate enough to have it and use it are most cautious about any type of war. You know, if they're serving in Congress, they're usually the last ones to say, yes, let's go invade, you know, or attack or whatever, or defend, because they know they've been through it and they don't want anybody else to go through it. And as far as on the streets go, patrolling the streets, they're more likely to let's talk it out, you know. Okay, so I'm going to just let you go with a warning, but make sure that you slow down because this is a school section, whatever, because they just want to get back to some normalcy. But then again, there are also those, like you said, those people that are dangerous with PTSD, if they're still suffering from it, definitely not on the streets. No, because you don't know what's going to trigger them into a psychotic breakdown. And that's what they call them, is a psychotic down, when, you know, loud noises come about, a car backfires or something, and their brain goes to that time where they were back in battle, and so they lose it. And, so that's not good. But as far as just in general, if they've been, you know, brought back to some normalcy, because they'll never be back to 100% after fighting a war, but I think they actually would do good to serve either in Congress or in some type of police role. And you know what else I think would help a whole lot better with our situation with police and policing is to bring back the stations within the communities. Don't have one central station in a huge city like Ontario, California, or Los Angeles, California, where you have one police department. You know, and guys that come out
in
of
Duluth, they have three community centers plus a central location.
Yeah, they need to have them so this way the community can get to know them and the police officers can get to know them, the people that they serve. You know, they'll see them every day going to work, coming in the station and not whatnot and stuff. And people are allowed, you know, as far as be able to walk in there should they need something, or just get to know them more on a personal basis. Because if you have smaller units in the community, then now they're working together versus working against everybody else because we've got to do our job. And that's not the way it should be intended to work. So I think the solution is more stations, fewer people in those stations to serve these individual communities. And so this way everybody's on the same page as far as crime and everything else, you know.
And we have community resource offices in both middle schools and both high schools up here. So they try to they cannot discipline students. Only the dean and the principal can, but they're there as a positive resource.
And to engage with the kids. Yeah. And so if we know each other and they know us and we know them, you know, we're not likely to stir up trouble, or kids will be more well-behaved as far as they'll know the police are there, but they're there as your friends. So if somebody's bothering you or whatever, you know, you can go talk to Officer so-and-so or whatever. But they just need to get in tune with the communities, and it's not a us against them or them against, but right now it is, and that's a problem.
No, I agree
and,
with you.
I was
going to
mention in the election cycle, I haven't heard much about, I've heard a lot about woke, but not about police brutality in the last 6 months.
Well, before you go to that, let me just finish the last point she mentioned. I agree with both of you on the points that you just made. And again, not to be a conspiracy theorist, but when you first came on, Suzette, you had mentioned something about not letting a good crisis to go to waste. Maybe some of this is what is the reason why solutions aren't seem to be found for things that don't seem that hard to find a solution for.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
No, I was just going to say that the only major issues I've heard, and I haven't watched any of the Republican debates, I watched the highlights of one, is mainly people are concerned about war spending and about the economy and about the border. But I don't hear a lot about internal domestic strife.
Well, the immigration. Go ahead.
Like as it gets closer to the primaries, they're going to talk about education reforms and all that. But right now they're kind of just dealing with the – you know, the major issues of contention.
The Republican Party, their debates were a joke. I mean, that's a
they
joke.
Were?
Yes.
How come Ramaswamy didn't, how come he wasn't in the last one? He hasn't dropped out.
Because they wouldn't allow him. They said that he didn't have enough points or whatever to be on the same stage as Nikki and
the other two.
Ron.
Mhm. Well, that's not democracy. They should have a minimum of five in the debates.
Mhm.
Yeah, go ahead.
The two were just back and forth. Yeah, the two were in a contest back and forth. As far as I know, this is what I did in my state, but I know Ron didn't do this in his state, and he did this and this and this, and he's like, oh, no, let's tell the truth, Nikki, blah, blah, blah. It was you that did this back, and that's not a debate. I mean, that was just stupid. That was a waste of time.
She doesn't even hold, does Nikki Haley even hold public office right now?
No. No, she works for, she left Lockheed so she could run for president. But, so they're all supposed to be on the same page. It was a Republican debate. So they're all supposed to be headed in the same direction and not be knocking each other out, you know, by getting personal or sending personal slanders back and forth. That's just bad. Bad politics, bad character. And that just really turned me off altogether. Vivek Ramaswamy stood out, and they didn't like that because he was outing everybody, even the people that were asking the questions, so the mainstream media. So, they weren't going to give him a chance whatsoever. And also, he supports
Donald Trump.
I think
they should bend the rules with the financing and polling. Like, let at least five people be in the debate.
Yeah, well, I don't think that they should actually tell anybody who's running not to be in the debate, that they have to earn a certain amount of support. You know, that's ridiculous. It's like, well, maybe that person will earn support if the people are allowed to hear them and what they have to say in the debate. You know, maybe they are bringing something fresh to the table. Who knows? But we'll never know now. And as far as Democrats,
remember
debates,
that one writer from
they had one.
The Northeast Seaboard that ran. It was a female in the Democratic side, and she got a lot of support. Like they had ton of people up. Yeah, Marianne Williamson, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, they had her. They had Bernie. They had Elizabeth Warren. They had several people between the race between when Obama left and Trump came in. So, yeah, I like it when there's more of a mixture. And I've never seen such a sparse population in debates.
Yeah. Have the Democrats even held a debate? I mean, I like to watch both sides to see what's up. And I am not aware of any Democrat debate or even if there's anybody running against Joe Biden.
I hope there'll be at least one person running against Biden.
Yeah, nobody running against him and no debates till election day.
The last question is if Biden or Trump dies before 2 months before the election, what do you guys think will happen? They'll just throw Kamala in there?
Well, okay, so you mean if Donald Trump gets elected and then dies 2 months after he dies, then if Biden gets elected...
No, I mean 2 months before the general election, if Trump or Biden dies, we know what would happen with the Democrats, but who would they put in there for the Republicans?
Well, then it would have to be Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis. People would have, they would be put on the ballot to, for the people to choose from or just run the election again, the primaries. We do that. But in the meantime,
I just don't think it's
going to
be an exciting year for American elections, except for if one of the wars proliferates in the Mideast or Ukraine, then outside events could drive the election to more excitement.
Because
right now it's kind of
Kamala
bleak.
Would step in.
I mean, do you guys foresee any of the Trump supporters throwing riots or acting crazy?
No. The only reason why they did that was
really
they felt like they were cheated and they wanted it investigated. They didn't want it overthrown. They wanted it investigated and. A new film out on the January 6th. It goes in depth about the people, the agitators of that made everything go down or escalated things that went down. And I thought that was very interesting. Footage, of course, that wasn't shown, hasn't been released to the public or was recently released to the public and stuff like that. So gave a different perspective altogether. With actually video of Nancy Pelosi and her in the Situation Room with Chuck Schumer. And, there's just a lot of interesting stuff in there that makes it look a whole lot different. Like, whoa, yeah, what's up with that?
Also, when it first happened, I didn't think that prosecutors were going to identify people in the videos and go after them. Like, I had no idea that was really going to happen.
And then just recently...
I mean, that was kind of like... I believe in going after people who, like, damaged offices and windows, but they didn't really reveal right away what was going to happen. So
right,
it was just kind of weird.
Definitely. And I guess...
And they did not let those people off the hook. Like... There were two Minnesotans that were convicted, too. So it was a unique situation. I didn't think I'd ever see that in my lifetime.
Me neither.
Well,
I mean, to find out that people have been held indefinitely and then in the end charged with trespassing. Like, wow. Okay. So you arrested these people in the dead of night at gunpoint, basically. Freaked out their families and their neighborhoods. And held them indefinitely, because they brought in these, big vehicles, that, you know, armored vehicles and stuff, and had the lasers pointing at these people and to arrest them because they found out who they were. But, you know, they could have been outside, just wandering around, whatever. They weren't actually – they were charged with trespassing because they, there was nothing else that they did except for enter the building.
Wow.
And so – and there are people that got excessive sentences for that. There were those that did vandalize stuff, and they got sentenced to trespassing plus property damage. But nobody, not one, was charged with sedition or what were people calling it, insurrection or anything like that. It was trespassing. Now, the Oath Boys, recently video has come out showing that the officers that testified in their trial, where these guys got like 26 years, lied. They're two officers. And they backed each other's story up. But the thing is that one couldn't have been with the other one when there's video of him in the Capitol showing that he was in one of the other buildings. You know how they have cameras everywhere inside there. And so the times didn't cooperate, and so they're busted now as far as for lying and saying that they were, and that the one saw the Oath Keepers, you know, arguing with the other officer, and they were harassing him and, you know, yelling profanities at him and yada, yada. And it couldn't have been. And there's no video footage of it. There's video footage of the Proud Boys with one of the officers. But they've got their backs turned to the officer because they were protecting that officer from agitators that were coming up the stairs. But the officer that testified that he was there and saw it was actually in another building altogether, and they have video and timestamps and all that. So that recently got put together and is out there now. So I was like, wow, what's going on?
Well, I'm going to look into that a little. I haven't had time to research off topics, so to speak.
Yeah.
Do you have any last words, Neil? Because I have to teach school at 8.
No, I'm just listening. You guys, are doing a great job.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hang up now. Happy Martin Luther King Day. Thanks for calling in, Suzette. And Neil, you were both a good contribution to the show. And two of our co-hosts are on administrative leave, like Derek Chauvin. And I don't know if they're coming. And I don't know if they're coming back until they repent.
Well, Neil, it was nice to meet you, and have a great week.
You as well.
Thanks,
thank
Suzette.
You
You're an inspiration. Have a good night, y'all. Oh. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Good night.